The grace, God's grace in traveling light. Before I go to that, it's one of those things that's totally irrelevant to this sermon. You may have heard it, but it struck my funny bone. I finally heard an African curse. May the fleas of 1,000 camels infest your armpits. I just thought that was cool, and I heard in a preacher say that, so I wrote it down so I would remember it. There's some advantages in traveling, isn't there? The grace of traveling light. You can imagine that I have a little bit of thinking about traveling light. You can always tell an inexperienced traveler by the size of their suitcases in the airport. And it's always a skill and a challenge to get it down to what you need and what you don't need. And I am not sure that I have fully got that under control, but I have done pretty well, partly by not unpacking my suitcase when I get home. So that's all mostly ready by 75% when I actually get home. But now, traveling with my wife, which we haven't done much of the international travel for a while, she always carries her pillow with her. Can you imagine? And so it was a childhood pillow, little feather thing, but it was pretty good size, and she had to stuff and pack it in until, of course, years went by, and she's not a young person anymore, but this was childhood, and so it starts to deteriorate a bit, and the feathers start coming out and messing up things, and so it was down to about this size. So then she had, of course, get another one, but she still then had to carry the old one along with it. And so It's always been a little like, why are you taking this? You don't suck your thumb anymore. You really don't need it. There was no negotiation. It went with her. The theme of the two lessons today have to do with healing in one way or the other, either being healed or not healed. And because of my work, especially in Mauritius, working with the Archbishop there on the healing ministry, it's been in my mind and thinking about it quite a bit. Africa is one of those interesting places where healing, unlike much of us in the West, is simply a fact of life, either the healing or the need for healing. And it's quite common that people will go, in fact, very common, people go to church on Sunday morning, just like you and me, and then if they end up with some, either a financial problem or a health problem or relational problem, something of that sort, where do they go? They go to the traditional healers, traditional African healers, rather than to a Christian church. And of course, one of the challenges has been because the Christian church in Africa was planted originally by missionaries, and the missionaries that went were not interested in that. So you have this massive gap between the culture that seeks some kind of healing and helping for various situations, and a Western-based church that didn't bring that along with the gospel message. It was a matter of bringing people to a place of converting to Jesus Christ, but it was to save your soul for eternity and disciple you along the way, but not necessarily healing. It was interesting. Last Sunday morning, I sat in a church, I don't know, of 2,000 or 3,000. I was escorted to sit in the front seat. And during the service, the pastor asked a young couple to bring their baby forward. It was just weeks old, and in that case, the parents had been very distraught because something was wrong. It was not specified with the baby. They took it to the doctor, and the doctor says this child is going to need surgery. And of course, the church prayed. And this Sunday, or the Monday before the last Sunday, they went in for the scheduled surgery. The doctor did a little more testing before they did, and finally says, this baby does not need surgery. It's totally fine. And so they were in church Sunday morning to give thanks for all of that. But that is a story of healing that occurred right there just last week. Excuse me. Traveling light. In this case, I'm thinking more of it as a metaphor for how we let go of things that actually hinder us, if you get it right, hinder us from actually following Jesus in some way in our life. So there's a lot of baggage that you carry along. And people now, you know, in Air Canada, if you've ever been on, I mean, they don't want to pay that $20 or $25 for the check-in baggage, so they bring everything and stuff it in. And people with backpacks are a total menace because they swing around and catch me in the side of the head and standing behind them. They don't even know I'm there. So it goes on. I'll try not to complain too much during my sermon this morning. But the things that we get burdened down with in our life, and we do not allow God to take care of it. You see, I started, the grace, the divine grace of traveling light. Because in that traveling light, we are told to cast all our burdens upon Him because He cares for us. Come unto me, all you who are weary and are heavy laden and burdened down, and I will give you rest, or I will refresh you. We hear that in the old prayer book every 8 o'clock service, and it's a promise for that. But that's what he means by what I mean by traveling light, because we don't allow God to accomplish His will and purpose in our life. We don't experience the grace of God when we have to carry the whole thing ourselves, and we clutch it and hold on to it and nurse it and pet it and kind of keep it around, put it under our pillow at night, just to fret over the whole thing rather than letting God actually take care of it. And it becomes heavy in so many different ways. And this is our human tendency, to have all the provisions provided by us, and rather than allowing God to do what God only is supposed to do, namely our relying on God's provision. So there's just three snapshots here. I'm going to cover them very quickly. One is Jesus in his hometown in the gospel reading. And he goes to his hometown. He's kind of launching this very beginning of his ministry. Now, this is Jesus, all right? You've got the stories. People must have noticed he was slightly different. He wasn't maybe not a jock playing baseball every Sunday afternoon or something. And the people, when he went into the synagogue and so on, was teaching someone, isn't he the carpenter, Joseph's son? He's a carpenter. He's not a rabbi. And it says, they took offense at him. In other words, they dismissed him and they put him down because there's no way that this could be a prophet. Jesus standing back says this wonderful line, a prophet is not without honor anywhere else except in his own country, among his own kin, and in his own house. If you remember when I preached on the first the 7th of June, we addressed this issue of his own family who did not believe him and didn't and felt that they need to kind of nurse him back to health because he was getting slightly off track. But here's the interesting thing. He said he could do no mighty work there, even in his own town. Jesus, who he was, could do no mighty work there, except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them. And then he marveled because of their unbelief. What an elegant way of saying it. I would have thought, you idiots. I've been around for well over 30 years and you still do not know who I am. No, he just simply says politely, he marveled because of their unbelief. Faith, interestingly enough, They did not have any faith in what he was doing. And so even the great Jesus, the Son of God, was not able to do many miracles in that place. And just a reflection, sometimes in the West, we are now so used to medicine, and that's not bad, that's good, because God has provided all of that for us. And so we are grateful for it. But as I told you that story, you would probably find more miracle healing stories of various kinds in a culture like Africa, because they are so aware of the spirit world, this both good and bad, and there's lots of traffic going back and forth, that their level of expectancy of God doing something is so much higher than it is in our culture, that it's probably one of the reasons why you see more occurrence of that sort of thing. Now, everybody, again, does not get healed there. That is an issue. So faith, when it comes to this, is a factor, but faith does not determine whether there's going to be healing or not. And certainly somebody's faith, the idea that if you hear it from time to time, well, if you have faith, you'll get healed. If you don't have faith, you won't get healed. That is not appropriate biblical teaching. But Jesus was traveling light. He did not curse his hometown. It says he went out into the other villages. He let it go. He went into, he said, you know, he marveled at their unbelief, but he just picked up, took his disciples, went into other villages, and they started to carry on their mission. Jesus was not bogged down. He didn't fret. He didn't mutter about his family, you know, why don't you wake up? Because they had rejected him in a way. He just simply picked up and went into the next town. He traveled light. He did not let that burden down. Now, the second part of the gospel reading is Jesus commissioning his 12 disciples to go out two by two into the villages and carry on the proclamation of the kingdom and carry on the healings and the deliverance from evil spirits. But notice what he does. He said, now, when you go on this trip, it's a little training exercise. It's like boot camp. So he says, here's what you take. The very small package. Take your staff, take one pair of sandals, and one tunic. If you have a bad night, it rains, get mud all over it, you could always pick up the second one. No, just take one. Don't take any bread, even. No food. Don't pack a lunch. No bag, and don't take any money with you. Now, that is traveling light. So they would go into homes, you see, and enter the homes, and they would proclaim the good news of the kingdom, just like Jehovah's Witnesses, sort of. They would be hosted by the family in these places. But he says, when you leave, if they have not accepted the message of the kingdom of God and my role in it, shake off the dust that is on your feet for a testimony against them. Now, this is what this has Jewish custom to it. If a Jewish person in their own holy land would step out into Gentile territory, they consider even the dirt on the ground to be pagan and unworthy. So when they would cross back into the border, they would take and brush the dust off their feet. And so that just as a recognition that they are back on their holy promised land that God had given them. But it sounds kind of harsh, you know, that Jesus told them to do that as a testimony against them. But the point I want to make is that the disciples did not consign them to hell because they rejected. It was a statement of judgment that at this point they have not accepted the good news and the proclamation that Jesus was bringing. But simply, and that's simply what it was, and it was a judgment against them on that. But there was no final judgment or consignment as if there was no hope in the future. Regrettably, I have heard preachers who just love to take that one on, and they love to have fire burning all around you when they tell you that part of the passage. And as if you were to die tonight, you would never make it because you rejected this one piece. You and I don't know this. And this is a part of the package where we want to take on God's business rather than let God do it. It was simply a recognition within that moment that they did not, that these people, the hosts, did not receive the good news of the kingdom. The disciples were not to carry along some resentment. Said, boy, were they a tough bunch. You know, he was so stubborn, I don't think he will ever say yes. You know, all that package, you start to and it's all, it's kind of, you know, if you're a salesperson, if you've ever been a salesperson, somebody says, no, I don't want to buy that. You know, you can end up kind of going home sucking your thumb because you just didn't make many sales that day, right? Travel light. Leave it alone. Jesus says, you know, if they don't shake the dust off your feet, you go into the next village. Go into the next home. Keep on going. Travel light. Not everyone who hears this good news of Jesus is going to respond with a yes. How many times have I experienced that? It's not our job. You know, and I'd like to just say here, in our own parish ministry, outreach, and other places, you have no idea what's going on in people's lives. And there's one way of kind of getting fretting and feeling hurt because somebody hasn't kind of performed the way you wanted to. People have to come time after time after time after time to sometime have it settle in. I remember when I started, became a rector of a parish, there was one couple who was so absolutely enthusiastic about youth ministry. We were working together and so on. 5 years later, he just had got bored and just kind of wandered off. And I remember how hurt I was that I had invested so much time in that couple, and yet he just seems to not have got it, and it's like that was an enthusiastic moment, but within 2 or 3 years, he was gone, and literally gone eventually from the church. Well, that could have been a lot of baggage that I could have carried around, and I did carry it around for a while until I finally realized, no, I've got more important things to do here, and so I had to start traveling light. Paul, the epistle reading, his thorn in the flesh. He had this, in all his writings, there's nothing like this. He was caught up into the third heaven, a very mystical experience. He said, there were things going on there, he said, that I cannot even articulate. And he said, I don't want to boast about it because it was, you know, it was such a wonderful heavenly experience, quite literally. But to keep me from getting too excited about it and kind of like, boy, I must be special. Look where God took me today for a trip. He was given a thorn in the flesh, and we have no idea. He was even subtle about what that was. We don't, whether it's physical or whatever, but something to keep him humble. But I want you to notice something here also. He prayed. He prayed 3 times. Don't stop praying. He prayed 3 times. Until finally God says, okay, it's going to stay. My grace is sufficient for you. When you take this on and kind of fret over the thorn, you just got a whole lot of excess baggage you really do not need. You leave that alone. My grace is sufficient for you. Sometimes God relieves our suffering. Sometimes he leads us into a certain kind of suffering. When we kind of ask the question, what does this have to say to us, all of these 3 passages? But often that's voluntary. You know, in the post-apostolic church, in other words, after the New Testament, the next generation or two, there was a lot of persecution of Christians. You've got story after story of miraculous healings and wonderful things going on. But you know, those followers of Jesus at that time never felt that God should deliver them from persecution and martyrdom. They never made that connection. So on one hand, they would talk about the healings and record the healings that had occurred in their church, in their life, in this new Christian church. But on the other hand, they willingly accept the martyrdom and didn't say, God, you know, you healed me here. Why don't you take away this big problem? I'm going to get persecuted. I might get martyred and eaten by the lions. Please, where were you when I needed you? They understood that there is sometimes a difference. But I'd also like to say healing is part of the gospel. So that healing is not just kind of one thing out there. When somebody wants healed, they want and are praying and asking for healing. But it comes as a part of the whole package. The gospel of Jesus Christ is concerned about our bodies as well as our souls. And whenever you die and I die and we go, quote, to heaven, we're going to eventually be in a place called the new heaven and the new earth. It's going to be like Jesus' body, as Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians 15, where he was recognizable, he had a body, but it was incorruptible. You're not going to get old and get rheumatoid arthritis and headaches and wrinkles on your face. And, you know, I know about that. Had a fascinating experience in Mauritius. I was asked to visit a number of churches where they had weekly healing services going. And this is the most unusual one that I've ever been in. The church was located in a town, kind of the center of town, and every Monday they have an all-day market there. So everybody brings all their goods in from the farms and other places, and they set up their booths and shop right there by the church. And here a few years ago, this church had a vision for ministering healing prayer to people on the street. So every Monday from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the church opens its door. It doesn't have a big sign that says, miracles and healing service here all day. But they just opened the door and they told church members, you know, this is what we're going to do. So church members started to come. And so people literally walk in off the street. They see something going on, a guy up there praying with people, and maybe 6, 8, 10 people that just kind of sitting there. And the priest is just, I think one of them was a deacon, was there to pray for people as they came in. And this was often in healing prayer or relationships, prayers for relationships for their family, any number of things. And in Africa, unlike here, they were women praying that they would get pregnant so they could have a child. I experienced that a few times. I was asked to start praying with them. I've got to tell you, I prayed with people for 3 hours straight without sitting down. And I think I must have received some kind of extra physical bonus for that, for being able to do it. And it's about the time that I thought that they were going to there'd be maybe 6 people, and I thought, this is the end. The next time I'd look up, there was 8 more people sitting in the pews. And so they finally had to close the doors early because I had to be through at 4 o'clock. But you see, often healing ministry actually becomes the door that opens people into receiving the gospel. And it's not like in the West where you kind of argue that, well, that there is a God, you know, and as opposed to atheism. That's not the issue there. Is that when somebody experiences healing, what it says, your God is more powerful than my God. Your Jesus is more powerful than the gods that I worship. And so it opens the door, and people accept the gospel often after the healing has occurred. excuse me. And healing is more than a cure. Now, this is not to make an excuse, but a cure is something that when you say, look, would you pray for me? I've got a bad ankle or something of that sort. A cure is when somebody prays for you and then quite miraculously that problem is taken care of, and often immediately or within hours. Healing may include a cure. But even those who've been involved in healing ministry have never, ever claimed that everybody they prayed for has been cured in that sense. But healing is a complete restoration, ultimately, of who we are as God made us. And so healing may include a cure in this life, but it surely will be a healing in our resurrection. So never be afraid to pray for healing, because the healing may include a cure, or you could be like one, he was a theologian, where he actually went forward for prayer for a back problem. He got home and his back problem was not cured, but his eyes were healed. Why? Go figure. Why God does that, I have no idea. So always be open to the surprises that God might have for us. So travel light is what I'm saying. Healing has to do with individual healing of relationships, of physical problems, emotional problems. But healing could be healing in relationship to a church, could be in relationship to a family, and the healing of the nations. There are African churches now, especially the big ones, that are working together throughout Africa, and they are trying to speak to the nations, to their own nation. One church that I was in Addis Ababa, they've got people in their church that are ministers, if you call it, in the government, a minister of investment, a minister of this and that, and so on. They have three or four of them in their church, and they have fairly high-powered businessmen. They ask them when they become a member of church, if you want to be a member of the church, we want you to sign this covenant that you will not take a bribe. In other words, what happens is that the lifeblood of a nation is sucked out by corruption from politics and business and the wealthy. And so they are trying to address that issue in their own nation. I'm going to finish. I read the story of a pastor who took a new church. It was a rather distinguished older congregation. And he was asked, you know, how are things going? And listen to what he says. He said, I spend most of my time listening to their history. They all need to tell me the mistakes that were made by my predecessor. My great fear is that they are not going to be able to let go of their sad history. So much so that it's going to kill them. Got that? So today, if you have a sad history somewhere in your life that you've been dragged down by, that you've hung on, today would be a really good day, a really good day to say goodbye to that sad history in your life that you're hanging on to, that baggage, and really start traveling light. Amen.